Hello and welcome to Kane & Rince Sound of Play 9. Sound of Play, we bring you an eclectic fortnightly compilation mix of some of our favourite pieces from the many undergarment moistening video game soundtracks we've enjoyed over the years. Joining me, Leon Cox, in this Sound of Play, we have Kane & Rince's Ryan Heyman.
Hello.
And a special guest, introducing Ruben Cornell.
Hello, hello.
Hello, Ruben. Right. Who the devil are you?
Who's Ruben? I am a composer, basically. Well, I started off as a composer. I write a lot of TV show music, mostly in the US, but I do BBC, Channel 5, all sorts of other things as well. I've done a few soundtracks for various games, little iOS games, mostly. And what else do? I help develop software that other composers use. So I don't know if we're going to hear any today, but a lot of the kind of orchestral software that composers use to put soundtracks together when they don't have a real orchestra or the budget for a real orchestra. I work with a few companies that help develop that so they can play, you know, orchestra on their keyboards, and it sounds
fantastic.
Usually totally realistic. Hopefully, if I've done my job right anyway.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting because it's something that does come up on here from time to time. We talk about whether, you know, in some cases you're not sure whether the budget stretched to an orchestra.
Usually no.
Usually not. And I think, yeah, like I think we've got a track coming up, one I've picked from Bayonetta. I think there's some not real orchestra in there. You can still just about sometimes, probably depending on the software they're using, there is sometimes just a certain something about violins or whatever that doesn't sound 100% organic.
Violins, brass especially. Yeah.
And brass, yeah. I mean, obviously, we've come a long way since you know, the farty notes of the Commodore 64 and the SNES. Not to knock those, because obviously we feature their music as well, but it must be one of the hardest things to do is to perfectly synthesize organic orchestral sounds. So, anything for our lovely listeners to get a handle on? Are there any pieces that you've composed that people might be particularly familiar with?
Game-wise, probably not, unless you really love kind of obscure indie Android games. Mainly, I guess top of my CV is America's Next Top Model. I do a lot of the music for that in the US. It's not really orchestral stuff for that, though. Although you do get kind of plinky-plonky Apprentice-style music. A lot of it's dance music, which is another thing I used to do. I used to DJ a lot, so yeah.
Yeah.
But if you watch a lot of reality TV in the US, you'll hear my stuff.
Brilliant. And also, am I right in thinking you do a bit of muso journalism as well?
I do. I've written for quite a number of years for Computer Music Magazine, including various specials about game music and soundtracks. And I also review video game soundtracks for Film School Monthly magazine in the US, which I don't think your UK listeners will be too familiar with.
Sadly,
I mean, obviously,
not.
I'm from
great.
The UK, but yeah, it's a magazine that's been going for years and years over there, decades. It used to be a proper magazine, but now it's all online, of course, and PDFs, but they still have an awful lot of content. And yeah, it's worth checking out if you're into video game music. They do a lot of interviews with video game composers.
Excellent. All right, we'll talk to you a little more after we've heard your first selection, which is what, Ruben?
It's a track called The Morning Fog's Wave from Shenmue 2, and it's a full orchestral track. Most of the music in Shenmue 1 and 2 is kind of synthesized instruments on the Dreamcast and the Xbox, but this particular one is from a soundtrack CD that was released in Japan It was something that I bought at the time, had imported to the UK, and it was, I think it was about 30 quid or something, and it took about a month to come, which is crazy, but I still have the CD here, and I just love the track. It's a kind of full orchestral track, and Shenmue is the reason I originally bought a Dreamcast, and also the reason that I spent 3 months traveling around Asia in my youth. So yeah, a very influential game for me, and the music's a really important piece of that.
Thank you.
Clean and Rinse, the main podcast, the games podcast. We covered Shenmue 1 and 2 in two separate issues. Those are 62 and 65. I upset some people by not enjoying them very much. I felt bad about it, but that was the reality of me playing them in 2012 or whenever it was. But, you know, absolutely total respect for the ambition and the technical achievements at the time, and indeed that soundtrack, which I know that piece we've just played in particular is many people's kind of one of their favorites of all time. So you obviously grew up loving music, and you know, both out inside and outside video games, Ruben, and was it just a natural thing that it was just all part of the whole for you? Because I mean, that's something that, you know, we tried to encourage, is that video games and their music aren't seen as some sort of separate entity to everything else.
It was. I mean, I'm old enough to have started my first computer I had was a Commodore PET, which was a secondhand one at the time. And I quickly moved on to a VIC-20.
Not a lot of music on the PET, though.
No, and very little on the VIC-20. It's something that was always hand in hand with my study. I studied classical music at the from a very young age at the time, and video games were just always there in the background. And the music, some of the games I literally did buy just for the music. They might have been terrible games, but the music was amazing. I remember Terminator 2 on the Commodore, which was an awful game. But because the music was really, it was really well done. It was really well orchestrated. And even on those SID chips, you know, it was an awesome achievement. So I used to just sit and listen to the title screen.
Let's hear from our first contributor in this Sound of Play, and that is Lyra Silver, better known as Liz Atkins. Yes, she is the wife of Tony, so nepotism rules here, but that's okay because she's picked this track from Final Fantasy X, of which she says, FFX was the first video game that really made an impact on me. It was a combination of gameplay mechanics that I didn't have to have lightning reflexes to use effectively, a good storyline, beautiful graphics, and an amazing soundtrack. This is the track that plays during Yuna's first sending, and its combination of choral vocals and the funeral march drums, along with the stunning visuals, really make you believe that those rainbow-coloured wisps are starting on their final journey. So three composers worked on Final Fantasy X, but I'm going to guess that this is the work of the man Nobuo Uematsu, but it could have been Masashi Hamauzu or Junya Nakano, and I wish it hadn't been, so I didn't have to mangle the pronunciation of their names. And yes, this is from Final Fantasy X, of course, originally a PS2 game, came out more recently on PS3, and soon to arrive in HD on PS4. Here's The Sending. Ryan, you've brought us something from, well, sort of the N64 era, but also sort of not.
Yeah, my first track is from Conker's Bad Fur Day, which we had a few issues back as well. This one is a decidedly less rude track. This one is an orchestral piece. The soundtrack to Conker's Bad Fur Day is a bit as schizophrenic as the game is. A lot of the praise and criticism for the game come from the fact that it so handily jumps from topic to topic, from genre to genre, from mood to mood. People criticize it for not arcing much, for not having much of a narrative through line. But also, on the other hand, it does make it unpredictable and very funny and kind of refreshing in that it just sort of lives in the moment. And every scene is either a parody of some other type of video game or of some entity in the media at large. And this piece, originally from the N64 game, although what I'm displaying is from the updated Xbox port Conker Life and Reloaded from 2005, is from the Dracula Castle scene, which was a parody of the probably at the time new Francis Ford Coppola film, Bram Stoker's New-ish. Dracula.
Yeah, it was 92, but the music certainly sounds, I was listening to it earlier and I thought, yeah, this could come from the score for Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah, and so what it is just this lovely fake orchestral. Just sweeping, very dark, kind of creepy, but also very fun piece that has always struck me as being, I love the soundtrack, but this is an amazing song, and it's kind of almost better than the game deserves. Not to discredit the game, but it's a wonderful orchestral piece. So, anyways, that is it is Rare, coming with Bats by Robin Beanland. We'll be right back.
Yeah, that could so easily be lifted out from a Castlevania game or something. You wouldn't necessarily know just by listening to that it was from a pastiche, a comedy look at the whole Dracula thing. I like it. My first pick is in honour of the relatively recent, a couple of months ago now actually, eventual re-release of Vib Ribbon on PlayStation Network. And in fact, this was the first time that Vib Ribbon had been available officially in the USA ever. It came out in Japan in 1999 and in Europe in 2000, but US players had to wait until 2014 for Nana Onsha's bizarre black and white procedurally generated music play along-a-thon. It's an odd game. I think it is worth sampling. The main character, Vibri, is this very adorable, cute female rabbit type thing in vector graphics. And the real the USP to the game was that you could whack your own CDs into the PS1. And it still works on the PS3 version, not so much on the Vita. You can put a music CD in and it will read the pits and troughs or whatever it does and will create levels for you to play to tap along with the very particular control mechanism that VibRibbon utilizes. Now, the problem always has been, in my experience with VibRibbon, is that either when you put a CD in, you'll put in something mad and hectic to try to play along to, and it will make the most tedious, boring level that only asks you to press like L1 every 5 seconds or something like that. Or sometimes you'll put in some, I don't know, laid back jazz or something, and it'll make a level that is all but impossible for anyone to play.
I remember playing this actually.
Yeah.
I never had a copy of it, but they never said how it was generated, but no. As far as I could gather, it was really to do with the dynamics of the track. So
yeah,
the more ups and downs you had in the what would be the volume, the harder it was to play, and the more the tougher it was. So yeah, if you had a kind of thrash metal track, because it's all very one level, it would never be interesting to play. Whereas as you were right in saying, the freeform jazz, because there's a lot of loud bits and a lot of quiet bits, it was a lot more interesting.
That's a very good point.
Although that may be completely wrong.
Well, no, I think you're definitely onto something there. It does make sense based on my experiences. Fortunately, Nana Onsha included a set of tracks by the Japanese band Laugh and Peace, which I think also works as a pun on, obviously it's Love and Peace, but also I think they're sometimes known as Laugh and Beats. Some of the songs in question have terrifically adorable Japlish type lyrics, including this one, Sunny Day.
Yeah.
very silly song indeed, but I like it. I do like it. Regular listeners may have noticed that I do have a slight thing for those sort of slightly squeaky, juvenile-sounding Japanese vocals that you get on those sorts of things. I don't know what that says about me. Hopefully nothing sinister. Now, back to our guest, Ruben. Somebody who we already know is interested in the classical side of things, interested in the dance side of things, but here we have a rather more traditional...
a rock track.
A balladeering rock track, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Not normally the kind of music that I listen to every day, to be honest. Yeah. But I hadn't heard... Basically, this is a band called Poets of the Fall, who are a Finnish rock band. Mm. I would say kind of emo rock, I guess, but they span a lot of genres. Never heard of them before. Was really excited for Alan Wake when it came out.
Eventually it came out.
Eventually it did. Turned out to be a little bit of a disappointment, I thought. But I love the episodic nature of it. And they always had a real song performed by a real artist at the end of every chapter.
Yeah.
And this particular one stood out to me. I thought it was a really great song. And then I went and sought out the band, the original band that had recorded it under the guise of Old Gods of Asgard in the game.
Yeah.
And they had two games in Alan Wake. They had two songs, rather, in Alan Wake, and then another one in New Nightmare, which is also really good, I think. And, yeah, I just really fell in love with that band, which was a surprise to me because it's not something I would normally listen to. And, of course, went then and bought all of their albums, and now I'm a massive fan of Poets of the Fall. Excellent. And all thanks to Alan Wake, really.
I really like the way they sort of integrated the Old Gods of Asgard and the lyrics to the songs and kind of meshed it all, intertwined it all with what the events of the game and all that sort of thing. I thought that was pretty neat.
It had its own kind of legend within the game, as if they were a real band. So yeah, I did love that as well.
So the song is kind of like a folksy, like an urban legend type song, where they're telling this legend, this story, and it's played as in the game while you're exploring their house, I believe it is, to try to search for clues, and then you hear from a phonograph downstairs just the one line repeating over and over: "Find the Lady of the Light."
Oh, it's on the record player, isn't it? It's scratching. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's their. Their way to communicate to you what your next objective is.
Yeah, very cool. Here it is, The Poet and the Muse.
There's an altar wrought with mystery of Tom the Poet and his muse. And a magic lake which gave a life to the words the poet used. Now the muse, she was his happiness, and he rhymed about her grace and told the stories of treasures deep beneath the blackened waves. Till in the stillness of one dawn, still in its misty crown, she went down to the lake, and in the waves she drowned. And now to see your love set free, you will need the witch's cabin key. Find the Lady of the Light, gone mad with the night. That's how you reshape destiny. When there was no answer, he was overcome with fear. He searched in vain for his treasure lost, and too soon the night would fall, and only his own echo would wail back as his call. And when he swore to bring back his love by stories he'd create, nightmares shifted in their sleep in the darkness of the lake. And now to see your love set free, by night. That's how you reshape destiny. In the dead of night, she came to him with darkness in her eyes. We're in the morning, guys. Sweet words as her disguise. He took her in without a word, for he saw his great mistake, and vowed them both to silence deep beneath the lake. Now if it's real or just a dream, one mystery remains, for it is said on moonless nights they may still haunt this place.
Did an Alan Wake podcast, yes we did, quite a while ago now, issue 64. I think that's in between those Shenmue ones, by pure coincidence. So do check that out.
God, it is.
Yeah. Freakish.
That is weird.
Total serendipity. Yes, we had some good discussion about Alan Wake and its pros and cons, whether it was worth the wait or not, as always. Now, our sixth number for this Sound of Play is from our forumite Bakers 12, and this is also from a band of sorts, the band being a fictional act, the Scottish hair metal band from the 80s, Love Fist. They didn't actually exist, but they exist in the world of Grand Theft Auto Vice City. So these tunes were put together mainly by Alan Walker and Craig Connor, and composed and arranged for GTA Vice City. Now, Love Fist crop up here and there throughout Vice City, and also their legacy lives on throughout the whole GTA thing, as it's has some sort of consistent lore. The lyrics are a little cheeky, they're a bit close to the knuckle for our clean tag, but I think we're okay, and we're even gonna call the track by what it's known as. Bakers 12 says the GTA games have an amazing wealth of licensed tracks, and Vice City, in my opinion, has the strongest selection. But this little gem from the in-game fictional band Love Fist is a spot-on parody of 80s hair rock, a la Spinal Tap. Here we go, Dangerous Bastard.
Let me see.
haven't covered Grand Theft Auto Vice City on Kane and Rince as yet. The only Grand Theft Auto we've done was 4, and that came in issue 75. We also talk about the episodes from Liberty City. Now it's over to Ryan for our 7th track.
All right, so I'm moving from a very big dark orchestral piece to something really small and really sweet. This is from Rayman Legends. And just like the first game, there's also a little bit of a very distinct spirit. The levels typically have very fast-paced music. They're very action-packed, while the menus tend to be very laid-back and just very relaxed and nice. And what I have here is one of those just world themes as you're browsing the painting gallery before you jump into a level. It's called The Swamp Whistler by Christoph Rahl, and it's just a nice ukulele track with some whistling over the top, and it puts me in a really good mindset whenever I listen to it.
I do like those soundtracks to both Origins and Legends. Is it Christoph Erhal and Billy Martin also contributes in some way? I'm not exactly sure.
Very weird, very inventive soundtracks. Always lots of interesting sounds and lots of interesting instruments.
I'm surprised that one hasn't been picked up by a bank to use in... It sounds like some sort of Santander or Lloyd's TSB.
Oh no, that would ruin it. It does. You're absolutely spot on. You can tell you're somebody who composes incidental music. Have you done any advert music?
Yeah, I've done some. It can be quite derivative sometimes, but
I bet it pays okay. I love the kazoo-led stuff for the shoot 'em up levels in the Rayman games, where you're the little mosquito, you're on the little mosquito dude, and it's all done. It's like a paper comb, you know, type melody. And of course, in Legends, there's also that the amazing rhythm action levels, which have various. Pretty much, they're not quite cover versions, are they? But they certainly sound like. There's Black Betty, isn't there? And and that one from Kill Bill and stuff like that. Those levels are incredible. Anyway, you can play Rayman Legends on most contemporary formats, and I recommend that you do. We haven't podcasted on Legends, but we did do a show on Rayman Origins way back in issue 20 of the Kane and Rince podcast. Now back to the possibly fake orchestras. A lot of composers worked on Bayonetta. A huge stack of them, in fact. I won't name them all. I'm going to guess that One of a Kind, as it's like the main opening piece, is by Hiroshi Yamaguchi, the chief composer on Platinum Games Bayonetta. This piece is just it just redefines the word epic. It's the sort of piece that starts off pretty, it sort of goes straight in full intensity and then keeps ramping it up. Every 30 seconds or so, it seems to get more fraught and more
just like
urgent.
Just like the game.
Exactly like the game, yeah. And I think it really sets the scene for the whole experience. And this piece, it lasts almost 5 minutes, but I think after about 3 minutes, you think it can't possibly go on anymore or get any more urgent, but it somehow manages to. It accompanies the still, frankly, quite astonishing opening playable scene of Bayonetta as you're crashing to earth on chunks of masonry from a giant falling clock and things like that. Yeah, it still looks fantastic on the Wii U version. Still sounds amazing as well. We're not going to finish this with this, but we could do. We're going to finish with something even more classic from the same sort of stable. But for now, this is One of a Kind.
Oh,
exhausting, frankly, but wonderful. I could have picked any number of tracks from that game without knowing who composed what, but I like the her main theme. I like the versions of Fly Me to the Moon. I know it drove some people mad, but and there's just a lot of pieces in there which are as much of a celebration of the history of video games as the game itself, which I love. We talked about both Bayonetta and Vanquish in one podcast when we used to try to do that a long time ago, back in issue 12 of Kane and Rince. We wouldn't do that now. Bayonetta would certainly get its own show, as would Vanquish, but it's probably still a podcast worth listening to. Bayonetta 2 could happen at some point in the future. That's 8 tracks down. We have one to go, and it is probably the most famous video game song we have yet featured on Sound of Play. And I'm so glad you picked this one. And please, Ruben, tell us why.
I didn't realise it was so iconic. I just love it. Obviously, it's an iconic game, Outrun. And the track is Magical Sound Shower. This is it's a bit of a funny one for me, because I had Outrun on the Commodore 64. And
not a great conversion.
No,
let's be honest.
This track was in it, but it was pretty dreadful.
Yes.
This was when I was, I don't know, maybe 10 years old or something. And basically we had no, I grew up in this little town in Essex, and we had no arcades in the town, or no arcades anywhere near. I know.
I can't imagine that.
it was literally the only chance you had to play arcades was when the fair came to town once a year. So that was pretty terrible. But there was a new leisure centre opened up when I was around that age, and they had a few arcade machines in the leisure centre. They had Afterburner, I think, and Outrun. And it was a completely different experience, Outrun on the arcade, than it was on my Commodore 64 at home.
Absolutely.
So the original, and I think the best version of this, is the arcade version. You got the version on an audio tape on the Commodore 64.
That's right.
At the time, I seem to remember. But there was nothing like playing it on the arcade. And I think this was the first time I experienced sort of interactive music, which I don't know whether that's shaped what I do these days, but you probably know more about this than me, Leon, whether it was the first game where you could choose the music.
I think it may have been. I'm not 100% certain, but it was. I remember it being, when I first saw it running, it blew me away, that sprite scaling technology. I mean, it wasn't the first game of that run from Sega. It came after Hang On, but it was eye popping at the time in 1986. And after watching it over people's shoulders and being blown away, you know, stepping up and putting your 20p in the machine and then being asked to choose your soundtrack as well. Yeah, I don't remember having experienced that before.
I'll have to check it out and see whether that was the first one. Obviously a precursor to Grand Theft Auto and all those other driving games.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, I also got, although I didn't have a home conversion of this because I didn't have a format that it was on at the time, I also got, they cover mounted the soundtrack on a cassette on CMVG back when the conversions were about to come out. Then later I got, there was a CD mounted on the front of, I think it was Arcade Magazine when Outrun 2 came out, which had all the original versions from the game and their Euro remixes by Richard Jax.
Oh yeah.
As well. And yeah, I mean, I've just owned this game since in multiple formats on multiple systems. The probably still the best one, is the most accurate, is the Sega Saturn Sega Ages version, but it's also that you can play it in Shenmue, of course, in the arcade. There's a slightly dodgy version on there,
I'm seeing how all my games are linked together now you've pointed it out.
They're all tied up.
I didn't realize.
Happy news, 3DS owners will be getting what is almost certainly going to be an absolutely spectacular port of Outrun in their 3D series. This wonderful Japanese team called M2 have been putting together all these Japanese coin-op ports for the 3DS for Sega. So there's already Super Hang-On and Afterburner on there, Afterburner 2, as you say, Galaxy Force 2 as well, and various other. They're also porting some some Master System and Mega Drive stuff, Genesis. They've just announced Streets of Rage 2 is coming. But the Outrun port, I know some people have already played it, and I think it's meant to be like one of probably the finest home version yet. So before we hear Magical Sound Shower, just want to say first that, as you've heard, once again, it's not just about what we, the Kane and Rince team and our guests like. So please do venture over to our forum. We could do with some new requests at kaneandrince.com/forum to add to the playlist for future Sounds of Play or Sound of Plays. Has anyone got a definitive answer on that? I'm still not sure. Sound of Plays. Until Sound of Play 10, it just remains for me, Leon Cox, to thank Ryan and our special guest, Ruben. Now, Ruben, do you have anything that you would like to plug?
Follow me on Twitter if you fancy some musings. It's at RuTunes, which is RuTunes. If you're interested in making your own soundtracks and tunes and kind of virtual orchestral kind of stuff, then it might be useful to look at my tutorials online. There's plenty of them. If you just plug my name into Google, you'll find all of them. It's Ruben Cornell, C-O-R-N-E-L-L, and I shall leave you lot to hunt me down.
Fantastic. Oh, thanks so much for coming on. It's been brilliant to have you.
Thank you, guys.
And yes, so here we are, the amazing Magical Sound Shower. Until next time.